Big.
Shiny.
Goons.
We just touch them all, Joe!
Yeah! You beauty!
It's only game.
Hello and welcome everyone to the show that gets people talking about something else. This is Big Shiny Goons, this is episode 3. I'm your host Thomas and we have a fantastic guest today. They are the editor of all things Californian hockey for SB Nation and just wild San Jose Sharks fan, mega fan. C. Morley is here. How's it going, C?
Good. Glad to be on.
Yeah, I know. You're catching on early, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So how's the season going for you? I know it's crazy in California, I guess.
Yeah. The Sharks are terrible. So that's been interesting. The Ducks, it seemed like for a while, might be able to hang in there just because they had good goaltending. And then they're on like an 8-game losing streak.
Not a fun time.
Yeah, but the Kings are actually, they're quite fun. So at least it balances out a little bit. It's, I just don't think like more than one team in California can be good at any given time.
I know, so I remember watching like those like Kings-Ducks rivalry when they're kind of like, when the Kings were good and the Ducks were like trying to be good. Like, I don't know, I might be remembering it too fondly in hindsight, but I remember like those are, like that was kind of the rivalry to watch sometimes.
Yeah, there was a streak for a while where I can't remember exactly how many years in a row it was, but there was a California team in the Western Conference Final every year for a while there. So, like, they were all pretty good at the same time, and then they all got bad around right. The same time. The Sharks hung in for a little while, but I think, I don't know, after Erik Karlsson joined, the roster kind of exploded, and there are so many bad contracts that it was kind of inevitable.
Like, is it weird covering a team like that? Like, with the Sharks, where you're kind of, like, you could always sell the prospect hope, but, like, you know that the contracts are just, like, going to be there forever kind of thing.
Yes. It's definitely, like, there's not really much to look forward to. I mean, it's been years of drafting really low, and then, you know, the contracts just are what they are, and you hope, you put your faith in Doug Wilson being able to eventually trade those contracts or whatever, but right now it is rough, and Sharks fans don't know how to react to a bad team, because in recent memory it's really only been the 2014-15 season that they were bad and missed playoffs. And like beyond that you have to go like, you know, pretty far into the 90s. Okay. So they just don't know how to cope.
Right. Yeah, it's like they worked all this so hard to get to that cup final, and then it's like, okay, we'd made it that way, and then let's try to sustain it by getting all these old dudes locked up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least there was, they did make it to the conference final. Was that the year the Blues won the cup?
Right. Yeah.
So fairly recently, but the roster has only gotten worse since then. So
Pavelski left. There's no real hope.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Don't get me started on the Pavelski thing.
Just seeing him light it up in Dallas. Perfect. Just in a different color green.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird covering a team that sucks, honestly. Like, it's just this weird vibe of, like, you're trying to look at the future a lot. Like, I guess with the Ducks and Kings, it's more so, like, you could really focus on prospect, really. You could just, like, sell that so hard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, I mean, the Kings, no one expected them to be as good as they are this year. I mean, they're pretty fun more than anything, more than being good. They're fun to watch, but they're still a little bit out from their rebuild being complete, and they're very aware of that. So at least the fan base is excited about these young players that are all coming up, and there are so many. I think with the Ducks, it's like they have just a couple high-end prospects, and then the rest of their talent pool is not great. So it is really hard to talk about the Ducks. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess, sorry if there are Ducks fans listening, but the good news is that there aren't a lot of them. So at least there's that. There's not a ton of Ducks fans that are mad in my mentions.
I mean, who could watch those jerseys for like 82 games in normal times, right?
Oh, They're the worst. Just terrible. They're the worst. Anyways,
speaking of not terrible things, let's move on to the first segment. This is called The Content. And yeah. Perfect. So this is the segment of the show where we get guests to talk about what they're listening to lately. So C, what are you checking out recently?
I mean, Taylor Swift has, like, she owns my ass. Like, it's just, I'm so whipped for Taylor Swift, it's not even funny. So I've been listening to Evermore constantly, but there is actually, there's this Australian, I think she's mostly known on TikTok. I feel really old, like, talking about a TikToker, but, like, cool. And her name is Peach, and she's Australian. She has, like, pink hair, and she's literally released, like, 3 songs in the last 3 years, but they're all fucking bangers. And she just recently released this one called Josh, and I have been playing it on repeat. It's so good. It's so catchy. She is so clever, and that one, I just that single song, I will play it once. And it's so short, too. That's the other thing. Like, it's just under 3 minutes. Okay. So, like, you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, I wanted more. So you just play it again. I've been obsessed with her lately.
I feel, yeah. Like, do you discover a lot of music on TikTok? Like, just, like, new stuff?
Yeah, honestly, like, every time I hear a song that I like on there, I kind of just throw it into this playlist that I have on Spotify that I'm like, oh, okay. And so then I'll just listen to that because it's kind of stuff that, you know, you're used to hearing because you're scrolling through TikTok and it's a lot of the same audios over and over. So eventually they get stuck in your head. So I'll just throw on that playlist, and it's quite a diverse range of artists and stuff. There's one girl group that I ended up really liking called Avenue Beat that I found through TikTok, and I think Conan Gray got big through TikTok, and that's how I'm aware of him, but I like his music. So yeah, I really do think that it's kind of enabling these smaller artists to reach really huge audiences just by one of their sounds going viral. All you need is like 30 seconds of a song that is a hit and everyone's gonna hear it. So it's kind of interesting. It's a new way of engaging with music for
right, sure. And kind of like it almost forces it on you. Like, you don't have to click anything, you just literally, like, it plays automatically. You don't even have to, like, select, okay, I'm gonna listen to this, or select whatever, like, on other, like, social media or whatever. Like, it's, like, just right in your face, right?
Yes. TikTok's algorithm is insane. It's unreal. It's so good. Like, they are not kidding about the For You page being for you. Like, and the reason, I was just thinking about this because I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about how the Ratatouille musical that was done on, like, TikTok, and how that all came together. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. But here's how I know that the For You page is for me, is that that shit was never on my For You page, so I didn't have to ever engage with it. They knew. I had no interest.
Right. That's exactly right. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, let's just skip right to it, because I know you said you had a thesis going on. So we'll skip right to the main segment of the show. The big juicy done. This is what you're covering. Okay. I don't even know what the title of the segment should be, but it's fine. So obviously, C, can you tell the audience, the lovely audience, what you are going to be covering? What album you mentioned to me that is your most memorable album?
We're going to be talking about Taylor Swift's 2017 Reputation album.
Okay, let's go.
I have, like, 4 pages of notes.
Oh, my God.
I've been listening to it all this week and, like, just taking notes on different songs and stuff. Like, I'm obsessed.
You're the most prepared guest so far. Oh, my God. Well, there's only 3, so, I mean, come on. But, yeah, so, like, what was your first kind of exposure to it? Just, like, first, like, memory of it, really. Like, listen, if you know.
So it was actually its release. I'm pretty late to the Taylor Swift bandwagon, and I'm not going to lie. Early in her career, she did a lot of the, you know, the Madonna whore virgin complex thing, whatever that is actually called. I can't think of it off the top of my head right now, but, you know, the whole, like, I'm not like other girls, I'm not slutty like other girls, like, you should be with me because I'm not like them, and, like, it just, and it was all her debut album kind of stuff, so I was kind of turned off to her by that. and just never got into her. And 1989 was obviously huge. I didn't really like the singles off of it, so I never got into it. And then Reputation was the follow-up album, and it had this huge, like, build-up to it because Taylor Swift, like, retreated from public life entirely between, like, 2016 and 2017. And so no one knew what she was doing. And when it came out, I just remember seeing the album art and, like, laughing at it because I thought it was so cliche, yeah. You know? It's, like, it's black and white. It's got her with her hair slicked back and that stupid-ass font. Like, I hate it. It's so bad. And the marketing of the album, because she didn't do any press. She just, like, released the album and the singles. And I hate the singles on this album so much. Like, it started with Look What You Made Me Do, which is literally the song I hate the most on this album. So my initial, like, whole thing, did not like it. I thought it was corny as hell. There was that whole line in Look What You Made Me Do, like, oh, the old Taylor can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because she's dead. And I'm like, that's so corny. Like, yeah. I fell victim very much to my whole issue with this album, which was the marketing. And so I, like, completely avoided it until 2019. I was 2 years late to this album, and then I became obsessed with it.
Right. So it's like, it's very, like, it was ham-fisted because it was in the middle of, like, our tabloid era, right? Like, super in the news, gossipy, whatever, like, interaction, beef with other celebrities, all that stuff. And then the cover art with, like, the newspapers covering half of her face, I think. And then, like, the Reputation, yeah. Like you said, like, the font was very, like, Hot Topic 2007. Like, it was very, yeah. Like, something you'd see at a Hot Topic in 2007. So it was very, like, I don't know, very...
It's literally every white girl's edgy face. Right. Like, that's exactly what it is. I hated it. I hated it so much.
Oh, yeah.
But... I think the marketing of the album really, like, did it such a disservice because, like, it was marketed as, especially with the lead singles were Look What You Made Me Do, Endgame, and, what was the other one? It was another, like, really edgy one from the very beginning of the album. Oh, Ready For It, which Ready For It is, like, one of the weakest songs on the album. But so it was all, you know, like, ooh, Taylor's working with Future now. And, like, look how edgy this white girl is. And it was so bad because, like, the album's marketed as, like, Taylor doesn't care about her bad girl reputation that you're all making up about her. But, like, the core of the album really is, like, actually she cares a lot about her reputation. And, like, who are you if you're not your reputation? And how do you fall in love with someone and get someone to really know you intimately when they think they know you already because of your reputation? And that, for me, it's such a broader, more interesting, like, concept that she gets to very quickly in the album, but it was never in the marketing. It was never in the singles. Certainly wasn't in that cover art. So, you know, you definitely missed the forest for the trees on this one.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say, like, the most, like, not even memorable, but most, like, meaningful to you or to, like, the album's concept? Like, what was the most important track, you would say?
Delicate. Okay. Delicate was my most listened to song last year. I had the Spotify stats to back that up. And it's so... I mean, Taylor does a thing with her track fives. It's always... Track five is always, like, a really... I mean, that's where All Too Well was placed on Red. It's just a very special track for her that it's always really intimate. And that's where the theme comes together. It's the, you know, I mean, to say it, it's a really delicate kind of song because it's all about, like, being known and other people's perceptions of you. And, you know, the line that's you know, my reputation's never been worse, so you must like me for me, like, that is, like, you know, it's about opening your heart to someone who knows, like, every bad thing that's been said about you and you still choose to do it. And that's, like, a very fragile feeling with, like, new love. And yeah, the way that she uses her voice in that song, it's just so it's so beautiful and heartbreaking and, like, so relatable. And I love that track. That is I mean, like I said, it was my most listened to song last year. And I love it. Sometimes you just know that, like, you meet someone and they are going to know every part of you and they're going to become this important person in your life. And you can tell that is what she wrote about in this track. And that, like, you know, it feels like driving home after that first date kind of feeling that, I love it. I love it so much.
Would you say, like, this is more, I know, like, 1989 kind of started Taylor's, like, evolution as a songwriter away from, like, the country stuff, right? So would you say, like, this more cemented her inside of, like, the pop genre and more of, like, I'm a songwriter now kind of thing, other than country kind of backing her up?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think Red is where she started to kind of experiment with pop just a little bit, and then obviously 1989 is a pop album. So this album, actually, when I was doing kind of some of my research for this, when I was just kind of looking around about what was said about this album, I found out that one of the songs was actually released only as a country single, which I think is funny. But wow. Still on Reputation, one of those was released as a country single, but it was her first attempt at doing like a cohesive pop album where everything kind of ties into a theme. 1989 was a really great album, but it was a little disjointed. It wasn't, she was working with different producers on different tracks, and she wasn't used to doing that either, because none of her previous albums really had a singular storyline that she was following. Whereas this is definitely, it is a listen through it all the way kind of album that you get a full story from it, from beginning to end. And that was kind of the first time that she had really done that with pop, which is really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And I noticed, like, I think I noticed one producer was Jack Antonoff, who's basically like been the dude for like a lot of pop music.
Yes.
Like, he's like Grimes, Lorde, Carly Rae Jepsen, Lana Del Rey. Like, it's all like him. No, it's not all him. That's not, like, I'm just saying, like, he's produced all their records, so it's just been like this kind of constant presence in this like female pop era of like really strong songwriters and kind of bringing them more of their voice. And like you said, the cohesive album, like, I think a lot of the general theme, I feel like, that are similar with all those artists is like they do release albums that are cohesive. Like, I don't know if you'd say that too, but
Like, what we think of as like the current pop music sound, that's all Jack Antonoff. Right. It's literally, he has his fingers in everything, and like, even artists that he doesn't work with, there are traces of what he's done with other artists that influence them, because he is so smart with music, and he has a very unique take on a lot of things. And I think he's just like, for anyone that works with him, he amplifies what they already do in such a cool way. So yeah, he's definitely like the guy in pop music right now.
Yeah, and like, even, I don't know if you watched the I think it's on Disney Plus or something, the Folklore sessions with, like, I sat down and watched. I was like, whatever, I'm just like, I liked the album. So I was like, yeah, I'll watch this. And then just like, he just comes off, I never heard him speak or never really heard of him. Like, I a little bit, just like, oh, this one guy. But like, he just comes off of this, just like, he just gets it kind of thing. Like, just like this general vibe of like marketing, but then to make it like not so cheesy music business marketing, but like to make it approachable and to make it still like art in a way, if that makes sense.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And he, you know, like, I have a background in music, and it's all very, like, I have to learn things, and I don't have, I have an ear for certain things, but I don't have that natural gift that he just has. He, like, can live and breathe music, and just, I don't know how people like him exist on the same plane of existence as me, because like, it is wild just the way his brain works about music. I wish I could think about that, like, anything like that. Right. He's just so naturally gifted in that way.
It's kind of crazy. What would, like, now I know we talked about, obviously we just finished like talking a lot more about what like it meant, this album meant for Taylor, but what did it really mean like for you, like, kind of like you said, you discovered in 2019. So about 2 years ago. And like, what did, was it like a real, just like perfect time moment of like, where you were just like, this is a perfect album of what I kind of feel.
Yeah, 2019 was a big transition year for me. And, you know, I actually started my job with SB Nation at the very beginning of 2020. And so by the end of 2019 is when I really had, I just had this album on heavy. I was looking at a ton of big life changes. I mean, I was going from working like 5 jobs, you know, 2 of them in retail, and just busting my ass to try and make things work. And now I was going to be starting my dream job. And that feels very scary. And yeah, I was in this moment of transition. I went through a breakup in 2019. So, you know, having that, especially when, you know, this album is, it's one, not her last like really autobiographical album. Her last one was Lover, but you know, it was one of her last ones, and it was obviously very influenced by her relationship with Joe Alwyn. And I think what you can see in this album is like the kind of person he is to her, and that person that just like knows you inside and out. And I think in a lot of ways I felt like I was losing that person, and so it was partially, you know, this sort of self-torture of like reliving those moments of, oh, I had this, you know, I had this and I want to feel sad about losing it. And also just like the way that Taylor thinks about love really speaks to me. I had a moment with Lover as well, that album that just, yeah, it made me almost feel hopeful that like maybe he's not the only person that's going to be that person for me. So yeah, it was definitely a big transition year, and that album spoke to that part of my experience.
Right. I feel like just like, it just feels so good sometimes just to find an album that like you can listen to and almost like not shut off your emotions, but be like, just envelop you kind of in this like world mm-hmm. of just, you totally get what they're saying. You could relate to it. And I'm sure like a lot of other people have related to it too, but it's just like this feeling of just like wholeness, I guess, is like just mm-hmm. feeling like this is exactly what I want in this moment.
Yeah. I came back to this album actually later in 2020 when I kind of had something that was starting with somebody, and you like see it in a different way too. And that's really cool, where it's like, oh, I was listening to it before, like reliving all of these things, like, and feeling sad about like, I'm never gonna have that again. And then you listen to it again, especially King of My Heart is one that's very like just fresh, new, like, oh my God, I found a new person kind of song. And to experience it then in that way was really kind of neat and cool. And I think it's very versatile in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know. I think this, I haven't really, so I like listened to the album once through. Obviously, I've heard like the singles and everything. And again, I thought the Look What You Made Me Do was super corny. But I yeah. feel like like on the other side of like non-corniness, I was more exposed to Taylor Swift with like Folklore just this last year. Like, of course, like mm-hmm. it was like, God, her singles in my ear, radio, play, whatever. But really, like, just sitting down and actually listening to a full album, because, like, I've listened to The National so much and just, like, and be like, oh, my God, like, I kind of have to listen to this now. But, yeah, and that kind of just, like, really brought me to the sense of her as, like, a songwriter and, like, so, like, complete and kind of just gets it more than I thought she did. Like, I always thought mm-hmm. she was just, like, country girl and then pop just because it was, like, trendy, or like, oh, this, that's the next move, you can't go get so big as country, you'll stay in your bubble and then kind of blow up.
Yeah.
But like, what did you think of like Folklore, I guess, like moving on into that, like after Lover and everything, and then into Folklore?
I loved Folklore. I mean, when it came out, it was just on repeat. I was interested to see at the end of the year with the Spotify stats whether or not Folklore or Reputation would have been played more, and it ended up being Reputation. But I think that part of that was because Folklore did have the deluxe version that came out. And Reputation was actually her first album since her self-titled album, her first one, that she didn't have a deluxe version. So I might have been listening to different tracks on it. So it didn't end up coming up in my end of the year. But, oh, my God, it's so good. And I've been wanting her to kind of return to that Americana thing. Like, now that, like I said, coming into Taylor Swift a little bit later, I've been working backwards through her work. And Red is actually one of my favorite albums of hers. I mean, Reputation is, like, my personal, like, I am tied to this album. But I honestly think that Red did not get due credit. And she is a phenomenal, like, Americana kind of singer, that she is a storyteller. And, you know, comparing, like, Reputation to Folklore, it's so much more subtle in Reputation, where in Folklore, she's stripped of that, like, need to be autobiographical, which is kind of always expected of her. And in doing so, she's able to tell these really complicated stories. And I loved that. It was just a whole new side of her. I think, what's the one about her house? The song about her house. Last Great American Dynasty. That one. That was the moment in the album. The first time hearing that, I'm like, holy shit. We are getting a whole brand new Taylor here. And it was so cool.
Yeah. I think it was just, it's just perfect. And it would be cool if, like, to see where she goes from here. Like, even less of, like, there was elements still in, like, the production of, like, more electronic a little bit, like, more in the percussion too. But, like, I wonder if she goes more into, like, the road of, like, folky even. Like, more of actually, like, fully acoustic instruments kind of thing. And it would be really interesting to see where she goes from here, because I don't even know where she could go. Like, more concept albums, more, like, just telling. I'm sure she has more stories in her, so it's just going to be crazy, I feel.
Yeah, I think the state of the music industry is literally what's going to determine the rest of Taylor Swift's career, in particular the ability to tour. Because, I mean, like, Reputation, that is a touring album. And I think part of what really sold me on it was watching the Reputation tour on Netflix, because some of the songs I'm kind of like, eh, all right. But then you see it live and you're like, okay, dang, like, I see what she was going for here. Okay. And Folklore and Evermore, as much as I love them, those aren't touring albums. I mean, and even Lover, the way she envisioned that was kind of like, you know, this small, intimate as a festival can be, but kind of like a festival setting thing. And I think she's, as touring comes back, she is going to transition back to pop. At least on some level, whether that's closer to, like, the pop sound of, like, Red or 1989, as opposed to, like, Reputation or Lover, you know, now that she's gotten the chance to go back and do the Americana thing and people have, like, let her be about it, that, you know, who knows? The future's wide open.
Yeah. I feel like if you go see, like, a Folklore Evermore show, you're just going to get depressed and remind yourself of the pandemic. You're like, I listened to this while I was just in my house for, like, several months. I don't want to listen to this song anymore.
Yeah, exactly. My cat has seen me cry to this album too many times. I don't need to do this in front of Taylor Swift.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Saying that, let's move on to the final segment. Okay, so this is the segment of the show, final segment, that we get the guest to recommend something to the listener. So it doesn't have to be anything that you mentioned, but just something that you've enjoyed recently, any form of media, book, article, album, single, movie, whatever.
For sure. I've mostly been watching a lot of stuff. I have been on Apple TV Plus a lot lately, which I don't know if you saw on Twitter, I was talking about my beef with, like, every streaming service and Apple TV. I was just like, I forget you exist. But then I realized I have media access. And so I've been trying to binge stuff before that runs out. So my recommendation is on Apple TV Plus, and it's a show called Servant.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's by M. Night Shyamalan, so I'm sure eventually I'm going to be disappointed by it. But I've watched the first season, and I think the second season is currently airing. I think they're almost done. So I haven't watched the second season yet. But the first season, oh my God, it's bonkers. It's like, it's this husband and wife, and they hire a nanny, and you find out that the baby died at like 13 weeks, and the mother went like completely catatonic, and the only thing that brought her back was like this hyper realistic baby doll. Okay. And so they had already hired the nanny before the baby died, and so when the nanny gets there, she's there to like take care of this fake doll. And by this is all set up in the pilot. Mm-hmm. By the end of the first episode, the baby is real. All of a sudden it's a real baby. Oh my God. And so, yes, and so like the dad obviously knows that something's wrong. The mother doesn't like seem to recognize that that's not the doll. And the baby or the nanny just starts being super weird. She's like this really young girl, and she is super crazy. There's cults in it. There's like phenomenal acting performances by Rupert Grint is in it, and then Toby Kebbell, I believe, is his name. But he was in the episode of Black Mirror where he rewatches his wife a bunch of times. Oh. His wife is played by Jodie Whittaker.
Like the memory thing?
And finds out, yes, right. Finds out she's having an affair through rewatching it a whole bunch of times in his eyeball. Yeah, so that guy. But they both are playing Americans, so they're both doing these like really intense like accents, and it all takes place in Philly. It is the most bizarre, but like engaging show I have ever watched. I like every episode. They're only like half hour episodes too, so like you just I got so into it, so I'm really excited to watch season two. But yeah,
it has like
it's great. I
feel like it has like American Horror Story vibes, if like,
yes, right? Very much that same kind of like there's a mystery there, but they're not really giving you anything. You're just sitting there going, what is happening? What is happening? But it's so cool the whole time. Hopefully it will not be as bad as American Horror Story ended up being. Yeah. But yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so, so engaging. Just phenomenal, phenomenal show. Really enjoyed it.
Perfect. That's awesome. Yeah. I don't have Apple Plus, but I think I saw like there's a free year or something with, I don't know. Maybe. But that'd be sick.
I think it's with certain products, right. Like if you have get a certain iPhone or whatever it is, but you can get a free year.
Whatever they're doing. I'm sure I could get a hookup. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you, C, for coming on the show. Where can people find you?
Of course. You can find me on Twitter. It's at NowYouSeeMe with C spelled like my name. And you can find all my stuff on Fear the Fin and I'm Calling anywhere on SB Nation that I'm at.
Perfect. Awesome. And you could follow me at NoSorryTain on Twitter. Follow the show at big_shiny_goons. Rate and review the podcast. They'll help a lot with the early goings. Get on some lists. I don't know. I don't know how the algorithms go. Maybe it's a For You page. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks to you again. Come on the show.
Bye.